the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
A little over 10 years ago, a major Wall Street analyst wrote a book called The State of the States, and it predicted over the next decade there would be a major movement from the East and West Coast inward into the rest of the country. Joining us on the program is J.P. Piccinini. He's a realtor. And J.P., this book that was written 10 years ago was predicting a major migration trend for tax reasons, for cost of living reasons, quality of life reasons. This was written 10 years ago. You're a realtor. You deal with these kind of situations. Have you found that to be true, or is there a different trend emerging?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on the show. I was once a realtor, and now I have the pleasure of managing about 3,000 agents across the United States and in various states. So it gives me a pretty good insight as to what's happening across our great nation here as migration is happening. If you remember the 1950s rush to California, will make California great. I'm fortunate enough to also be living in the great state of Texas. And Texas, it is the new California of the 50s. Roaring businesses moving here, people moving here from the East Coast, the West Coast, the upper Midwest, all for essentially the same reason: better quality of life, low cost of living, better political environment. All those things really fuel the rush that we're seeing here in the Midwest states, and not just in Texas. Really, when you think about the Carolinas down south, and you think about Alabama, a lot of people are moving to Alabama for the cost of living. Oklahoma and some of the great states here in the southwest, southeast are really seeing an influx of population.
Can you tell me, JP, are there certain cities, certain states that are seeing an outflux of residents? I know my own state of California, which has the highest income tax rates, highest gasoline cost, highest cost of living. I mean, if you take a look at San Francisco, I know that California is losing a lot of businesses. We lost Bank of America. We lost Wells Fargo. We lost Toyota. We lost Nestle. And so a lot of residents, in fact, even the big tech companies, whether it's Tesla building a battery factory in Sparks, Nevada. And then also I'm hearing the same stories from clients that are living in New York that are moving down to Florida.
Yeah, the exodus is coming from the East Coast, the West Coast, and the upper Midwest. Illinois, Detroit, Chicago, Michigan, Illinois, Chicago, and then, of course, New York area as well as California. They're moving different parts. Texas is seeing the California influx. Florida is seeing the tri-state influx. The Midwest is really moving towards Arizona and New Mexico and Nevada. Kind of those patterns. It seems like the retirement patterns have essentially sped up, if we could use that word, where people were waiting until they retired to move to those states and retire for a better quality of life. We're now seeing the millennials, and we're seeing the mid-centuries, the Generation X's, my generation, essentially seek those places because it's easier. You don't have to work. You don't have to go to the office. You can telecommute all day long. The world is much more virtual than it was 50 years ago, without a doubt. So it doesn't matter where you live. A lot of these states are luring these companies in with tax benefits and whatnot to bring in the tax revenue from the people moving here.
And how much has any of this changed, if any, as a result of COVID on where people are deciding to move?
You know, there was a couple of stories here, actually, that talked about an exodus to the suburbs because people are looking to move out of the suburb, move out of the cities, the urban environment, the ex-urban, which is just outside of the urban area. In reality, when you look at the data, it's really not that people are leaving the city, is that the homes that people are looking to buy with incredibly low rates and new construction are really in the suburbs, because new construction is in the suburbs, affordable housing is in the suburbs. So not having to necessarily go in the office where the urban environments are is really allowing this push out to the suburbs that is not necessarily COVID related. It's just because of the current housing and work environment that we're in. I don't suspect that we'll ever be at pre-COVID levels again in terms of office space. I do suspect the commercial real estate to take a really hard fall here in the next couple of years. But the residential market will lift up all boats here with this lift in tide as we continue to make record sales, and not just in existing home sales, but also in new home construction.
There is a shortage of inventory on the market, which is supporting housing prices. I mean, you're not seeing the glut, for example, that we saw in the housing bubble in the last decade, in 2007 and 2008. I mean, I can remember going to housing developments here where spec builders were building large swaths of homes and just putting them on the market with no buyers because the market was so strong. I don't see that today.
Yeah, we've got a perfect storm of low interest rates and lack of inventory and a much more larger population than we had in 2007. The millennials have done a great job at saving up. The millennials are really actually really savvy, financially savvy, insecure buyers, much more than the Generation X buyers that of 2007. What we're seeing now is in most parts of the United States, we have less than 3 months worth of inventory. A healthy inventory level is 6 months. So we're far from this 2007 overbuilt, over inventory supply, where property values were appreciating overnight. We're really more of like 2002, 2003 levels, which is crazy to think about it because this real estate boom has been lasting now for 13 years. And it's still going very, very strong. If COVID did anything, it certainly has boosted prices because of the lack of inventory, people not putting their homes on the market. But, you know, that's real estate. It's very market specific. You know, you look at the only two markets that have actually lost market value, home prices values, is San Francisco and New York City. That says a lot about people wanting to live in those cities and why people are living in those cities. And, you know, they, of course, San Francisco wasn't hit as bad as New York. So San Francisco, again, is the economical and political situation in that city, you know, that has drove prices so far up, so expensive, that has pushed people out of that city. In New York, I think people generally are just tired of living in a city. That, you know, you live in a city if you have to work in a city. If you don't have to work in a city, you're not going to live in New York City.
Yeah, and when you just talk about a number of factors that would be important, especially like for millennials who want to move out and maybe start a family, the cost of housing, number one, it's more affordable. Two, the quality of life. And then also you have to factor in, when you take a look at the two big recipients that I've seen are Florida and Texas, two common factors, cost of living and no taxes.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about millennials now as they're like the young kids that are maturing. But, you know, millennials are 35 now. They're well grown. Their careers are on their way. And the majority of them are well off out of college and, you know, out of their mom's basements, as we once said, and are buying homes. Yes, they're starting their families. They're getting up and going with their life and starting their careers, well on their way with careers. So those 50% of the buyers in today's real estate market are millennials, but when you break it down. So they're a huge pool of buyers that, again, are financially savvy. They've been able to save up money. They've lived in apartments. They like more of the travel experience more so than the lavish cars and things that my generation was really more enamored with. And then now we got to talk about the zombies, you know, Generation Z. The millennials kids are actually Generation X kids, you know, as they get out and start buying homes. These guys are going to have a complete different experience as they start buying homes, and they're starting to buy homes. You know, they're young. They're in the oldest ones are in their teens and high 20s, low 20s. So, but, you know, I remember I bought my first house when I was 22 years old, and it certainly was a different experience buying a home at 8% interest rate. My first home, $89,000 back in early 2000s. I wish I'd kept the house.
Yeah, I have a young employee, 24 years old. Rather than paying rent, which is very high here in San Diego, she bought a two-bedroom condo with low mortgage rates and her savings, and she just absolutely loves it. There's tax benefits for her. It's her own place, and she's no longer paying rent. She's building equity.
Love it. You know, the world needs more of the, those young entrepreneurs, young professionals. They get it. And home ownership right now is at an all-time high. 65% of United States citizens actually own a home. That's a very high number. It's historically one of the highest numbers. We're close to being record-breaking numbers here. Of course, that number took a hit in 2007 and beyond with the recession. You know, the American dream is that, right? Own a home, start a family, raise kids. And I love that because home is really where your dreams are made. That's where the family is. And that's why I love this business so much is we really, truly provide the future for people buying and making the largest financial investment of their life.
How much do you think COVID is going to change the landscape where people live? You have to question whether the large shopping malls with big tenant clients that used to be, you know, JCPenney, Sears, that are now bankrupt, and then also big office commercial buildings. I've seen major companies from insurance companies and other companies saying, you know, we don't need as much office space. How much will this change what the landscape looks like, even in the suburbs, in the future?
It's changed it. You know, you look at why people are buying homes, and there was a shift there. I remember about 3-4 years ago, I went on the radio and talked about McMansions going away because people didn't want these large homes. Now we're seeing a shift towards the large homes because, honestly, these companies, the hidden truth about these companies like mine, for example, is that we've learned that we can actually save money, be just as productive with technology and not having to operate our offices and requiring our employees to come to the offices. Our employees are happier because they keep more money. They don't have to pay for gas and telecommutes and, you know, toll fees in some cities and public transportation fees. They can work remotely. So really COVID has done, if there's one positive thing that COVID has done for businesses, is really accelerated the telecommute and technology way of working that has essentially brought us where we are today, where Zoom, everybody knows what Zoom is. Our kids are learning via Zoom. I'm curious to see how schools react to this in the long term if we found out that Zoom is just as good of a way for the kids to be educated, if not better than what they were doing before.
Yeah, there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal that this is causing a commotion in the education establishment because parents are, you know, looking at a cost of a college, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, depending where your kid's going. And then they're staying at home, taking classes online. You have to wonder, is it really worth paying $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year for a school?
Yeah, look, I'll give you some story here. I don't know about you guys, but I went to college. I can't really relate anything that I learned in the books when it comes to what I'm doing now. I went to college for an engineering degree. I did aerospace engineering, and then at 28 decided that real estate suited me best and went from engineering to real estate. So, but the experience and the network that I learned in college, that I received in college, by far surpassed the actual physical, you know, the education of what I learned as an engineer. Because to this day, I use everything that I learned in terms of social interaction and networking that I did learn in college in those early days and running this multi-billion dollar enterprise that's JP and Associates Realtors. The same thing with my son. He's 16 years old. We're in one of the best school districts in the country in Frisco ISD. We have 11 high schools, just to give you an idea how big this school district is. Frisco has a policy of only being 4A high school, not having any more than 2,400 students in one high school. So that required all these physical buildings, you know, and that's why we have 10 high schools, soon to be 11. I see that changing. I see there's no doubt about it, you know, with property taxes, not being able to keep up with school budgets, there's going to be a way. And how can you cut school budgets? Is educate as much as you can from home.
You know, as we see these trends unfold, you kind of wonder how this will also even shape politics. I mean, you know, if you take a look at the House of Representatives, the two most populous states, New York and California, dominate the House of Representatives. But as this population shifts, as more people move to Florida, more people move to Texas, Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, Idaho, it's going to reshape the political landscape as well.
Oh, without a doubt. I think the census will really show us where the migration is and where the extra seats are going to be allocated. Of course, we envision Texas gaining a few more seats, without a doubt, Florida as well. Sometimes I just sit back and, you know, wonder the policies that are on the West Coast and East Coast, at what point do you wake up and you say, okay, obviously we're not in the right path here. Obviously, we're losing people where people are immigrating out of our states, and all we can do is raise taxes to help sustain budgets. At some point you've got to stop. And I see Texas, my beloved state of Texas, turning, hypothetically, Democrat because there's so many people here. I think that'll, you talk politically speaking, that would be, if you can win New York, Texas, and California, you can pretty much assure that this country will be a Democrat for many years to come.
Yeah, and that's, the one good thing is we do have the election based on two senators per state. Now, they want to overturn that, but and the Electoral College, but that does protect smaller states like Montana, Iowa, or some of these other states. So who knows if that'll change in the future. So as you see these migration patterns, are you also seeing, in the last decade, it was the McMansions. From what I saw here, people were trading up. You had a 2,500 square foot house. You were trading up to a 3,500 square foot, 4,500. And even some of the tract homes were getting over 4,000, 5,000, and 6,000. Then that trend after the financial crisis, it was kind of like with the millennials, downsizing smaller homes. But now, as we work remotely, just as homes changed over the years, you had the living room morphed into the family room. Now you have the loft and entertainment room. What about the home office room becoming part of a house?
Yeah, I did an interview again a few years ago talking about the dens going away and even the home offices. People weren't building home offices anymore because they wanted to essentially reduce the number of the square footage. They wanted to build more features in the home, but not necessarily the room, because people were seeking that, the millennials, for example, were seeking that lock and leave lifestyle. You were locking your home, you were going to travel, and you could work remotely and do whatever. Or you could enjoy life essentially without having the maintenance of some of these McMansions. Well, now we're seeing, if you drive around, some of the riders that you see on the yard signs and for homes for sale, they don't talk about the master bedroom or pool. You know what they talk about? Two offices, gorgeous study or large office or something. That's really the selling point now for homes that these people are looking for. The square footage is being advertised a lot more than it was before, because of course, when you're on top of one another and your spouses and you want marital happiness and bliss, the key to that is try to be as far as you can from the significant other throughout the day, like you were when you worked, and then come back and enjoy each other. But during the day, you want to try to be spaced out as you can. I love our house. We have two offices, and there's days that I get in front of my office and I don't see my wife until 7 o'clock at night when I get out of my office. So
as we close, JP, are there any other trends that you see emerging in housing that you see going forward?
Really a push to rural living. We've seen such an interest in land, whether it's just for enjoyment or whether for value appreciation, but people are buying land, and as they say, they don't make any more of it, so it's a bit rare of a commodity. They're buying land, and we see a lot of these urban folks turn into cowboys and turn into farmers because they just really love the environment and want to be out and about, want to be out in the open.
All right. Well, listen, JP, as we close, if any of our listeners would like to follow the work that you do or services you provide, how could they do so?
Oh, absolutely. Go to jpar.com. It's our corporate website, JP and Associates Realtors, or JPAR Real Estate. We're the largest independent brokerage in the state of Texas, and we have franchise and brokerage operations in 17 states across our great country.
All right. Well, listen, JP, thanks for joining us on the program and updating us on future trends in real estate and migration. Thanks so much for being on the program.
You got it. Thanks for having me. That was a pleasure.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.